So I work at the law firm Keating Wagner Polidori Free. Most of my work is fraud, commercial fraud, and commercial breach of contract cases. But this is a little different. Maybe a breach of the social contract. So I'm happy to say that. That's fine. Yes. So as many of you likely know, the proposed expansion of I-70 through Denver presents a number of different challenges. And the proposal right now for that project is to lower I-70 below grade for a significant portion of it, such that there are very large stormwater management issues to deal with if you're going to prevent that road from flooding. Federal highways require 100-year flood protection, so they need to be protected from storms that you expect to see once every 100 years, or a storm that has a 1% chance of occurring in any given year. So there, if you dig a ditch at the bottom of two drainage basins, there are going to be some issues. In 2015, after new council members were elected, but before they had taken their seats, an intergovernmental agreement was reached between the city of Denver and the state of Colorado and CDOT, basically providing for some cost sharing in connection with the city's work to deal with stormwater management in connection with I-70. And that deal was called by some, rushed through, jammed through before the new council took their seats. Another recent development at council was that your stormwater fees that property owners pay was increased fairly dramatically, such that it could support a new bond that has been issued, upwards of $100 million this past issuance. But there's an ongoing project called the Platte to Park Hill Stormwater Project, and it's got several different components, but one of these components is closing of City Park Golf Course, which is designated parkland, for 18 to 24 months to regrade it such that stormwater would be detained in that area and slowed down as it proceeds sort of to the northwest. The overall budget for Platte to Park Hill is has been going up and up and up, and you may have seen a Denver Post story about it last summer, describing the $267 million to $298 million budget that they have contemplated for this. So this is a large expenditure of public funds. These funds are basically coming from stormwater ratepayers throughout the city, their expenditure is contemplated to be hyper-concentrated to protect I-70, and as well as the National Western Stock Show redevelopment and some of the new transit-oriented development at 38th and Blake. In April, I sent the mayor a letter and copied all the council and all that, articulating why I thought, and my client, J.D. McFarland, the former attorney general for the state of Colorado, thought that this was an unlawful use of public parkland. Public parkland is entitled to certain protections in the Denver City Charter. It cannot be leased without a vote of the people. Certainly for 18 to 24 months, the public is not going to be using it, whereas Denver Public Works or the Stormwater Enterprise Fund will be using it. The charter provides that, you know, parkland needs to be used for park purposes. And the question is highway construction support a park purpose? The charter provides that franchises or special privileges in parks shall not be given without a vote of the people. So the question is this Denver Public Works and the Stormwater Management or the Stormwater Enterprise Fund, are they getting a special privilege from this use of parkland? Now, after construction is completed, the line from the city is that, you know, this will be still a fully functional golf course. They may or may not have to tear down bogeys at 26th and York, which was only constructed 15 years ago at a cost of $4 million. So that's kind of the outline of the allegations in the complaint. The complaint seeking declaratory relief from a court to state that this is an unlawful use and to enjoin the construction of this project. I know there was a resolution that passed overwhelmingly at INC condemning this project. There have been numerous attempts by RNOs and private individuals to talk to the city about why this is a stupid idea, and pointing out all of the other stormwater issues that you could be addressing throughout the city instead of soaking all the public funds into this project, so to speak, on the soaking front. The city is very intent on moving forward with this project. So if they don't listen to people, the idea is, well, they gotta listen to a judge. So that is the basic outline of the case. We filed the suit in June, so the swift wheels of justice are slowly turning. The city filed a motion to dismiss saying, well, our plans aren't really totally final yet, so this is unripe, this is premature, so no, this can't go forward. The judge didn't buy that argument. So the case is proceeding. The next event in the case is a initial case management conference. The judge is Michael Vallejos. That is coming up on Thursday at 10:30 a.m. in courtroom 409 in the city and county building. So if you'd like to attend, you're more than welcome. It's a public forum. If you attend, I hope you sit on the plaintiff's side. I don't think that pitchforks and torches will be allowed past security. The judge is going to decide this case. That there will be no jury. So it's sort of our first chance to see what the judge is thinking beyond his order denying the motion to dismiss. After that, the case will be set for trial at that case management conference. We'll probably shoot for October-ish of this year because the plan is for the golfing season to run its course and then for the construction to start. There are three firms that have been selected as sort of finalists for the design, bid, build kind of process, or at least the design process in connection with the redesign of the course. I look forward to seeing what they have in response to subpoenas and sitting down for depositions and asking a lot of questions about this whole thing. So to date, you know, discovery hasn't opened yet, so we have not been able to send out subpoenas and sit people down for depositions and that sort of thing. So that is about to start. What else?
Can I just add one thing about why this is so critical that this group start watching? There are a number of parks in this city that I believe the city is going to move on if this isn't stopped. For example, Crestmore Park. They're now saying, oh, we don't have enough detention in the upper basin. And, you know, we keep thinking, well, maybe the people there will fight it. Maybe if they go after Wash Park, people there will fight it. And believe me, I do think there'll be people fighting it. But this is where we need to put our money. This is where we need to put our energy. And it needs to be a citywide effort. I can't tell you how they've changed their line, why this has to happen, and you'll hear about it as the lawsuit goes through. But it's pretty important, so.
Is the case management, are you saying that at that, on Thursday, it's not a question of whether it will go forward, but that the date will be set?
We're going forward.
So the date
for trial will be set. Other deadlines in the case will be set. But we are.
It is going forward.
We are going forward.
It's my understanding the IGA agreement has expired. How does this affect your thinking? And is that a correct piece of information?
I do not think the IGA has expired.
And can I ask a question? Not all of us know what IGA is, so when we start talking in these acronyms, let's at least clarify once at least.
That is the intergovernmental agreement that I referred to earlier. And regardless of whether it's expired or not, the city's going forward with this. There was some end of the year.
It was the right to terminate at the end of December 2016, and Adrian got that a little mixed up. So there was an option for both the parties to terminate that pass. If it isn't fulfilled by December 17, there are fines. But the 16 deadline did not make it null.
One thing that the city has repeatedly pointed to with respect to the IGA is that if the city doesn't deliver a certain amount of stormwater management for this project by certain dates, then it can be fined $5,000 a day by the state. Now that sounds awful, $5,000 a day. However, that is only $2 million a year. The project itself, of course, is a $200 to $300 million project. So this boogeyman of the fine has been thrown around a fair amount as reason why, well, now we have to do it. And the upside in the IGA for the city is that they are getting some of these costs either paid for or reimbursed by CDOT. So that was kind of the carrot in the whole thing.
But CDOT is proposing right now $1.5 billion of infrastructure work for the entire state of Colorado. And this 1 mile segment is about to cost about the same amount.
1.2 was the latest that I heard. And it's an incredible amount of money for a very short span of highway that will deplete the state's resources to address issues around the state. In my opinion, and the opinion of a lot of other people, doubles down on a horrible urban planning decision in the 60s to cut I-70 through existing neighborhoods in Denver. There are two other lawsuits pending related to I-70. One is a air quality piece of litigation that suggesting that the CDOT has not crunched its numbers correctly as to the air pollution that will continue to descend upon these impoverished, largely Latino neighborhoods. And then there is also a complaint that was sent to the United States Department of Transportation and the United States Department of Transportation then has to act on. The time's running out for the current administration. So something might happen in the next couple days. They did indicate that they were going to have some sort of decision coming out. So we'll see. The existing United States Department of Transportation Secretary has expressed his dislike of urban highways because of general social justice issues, because they generally tend to be run through the poorer and browner sides of town, and causing a lot of problems. So that is kind of in the works as well. So,
John?
Could you remind me again briefly what your argument to the judge was, why you think that's the best one, and what happens come October, or I assume some point after that, when he decides either for or against you?
Well, there's really kind of four different pieces of the argument. There's zoning issues. There's a couple of different concepts under the charter. Is this a special privilege or a franchise being granted to any of the associated entities? Is this essentially a lease to Public Works or the Stormwater Enterprise Fund for a period of 18 to 24 months when no one else can use the park or the golf course, which is a park? There's some common law aspects to it too, and the charter provides that the director of Parks and Recreation has to be managing the parks for park purposes. And the big question here is this a park purpose or not? So those are the sort of four angles. Not sure which one's going to be the best. Got to see what discovery shakes out with, but. If there is a determination from the judge that indeed one of those arguments has legs, then the judge will likely enjoin the city from this performing this project.
Helena?
Just a quick question. So for your purposes and every other purpose, then the golf course, city golf course, is considered park land, correct?
It is designated park land, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Since it appears just by observation that a lot of detention is typically built into parks, okay, that's just seeing what happens, is there a particular body of Colorado law that covers that? Because obviously it has been done. And so it feels like there's, I don't know if there's any precedent in the law, I'm not a lawyer, but there obviously is physical precedent. And that seems like something the city would argue. And how do you plan to handle that?
Well, they certainly haven't, didn't raise directly those kinds of precedents in the motion to dismiss briefing. There's precedent from out of state. There's a case called Friends of Cortland Park that was in New York State, and there was this big park that I think was actually a golf course, right? In the Bronx, and it might have had some golf course aspects to it. And the city of New York was proposing to close it for 5 years and put a water treatment plant underneath of it. And then cap it off and, you know, everything's fine, it's a golf course again. And that was deemed to be a non-park use. You know, that there's a line somewhere between a de minimis closure of a park, you know, if it's a small portion of it or a very small time, and, you know, a permanent closure. And the judge said, well, you know what, 5 years, that's too much. So there is some precedent on this. Precedent in Colorado law is a little dicier. The other questions are, that there is stormwater management features in parks now, certainly. The question is, were they installed before the park was designated? Were they installed after the park was designated? And even if they were installed after they was designated, just because someone didn't challenge it then doesn't mean we can't challenge it now. So
I understood that there was a question of whether the park use of the detention pond would benefit the golf course. And it doesn't in any way. It's in service of downstream.
That's the idea. You know, there's been various arguments made. Well, water hazard features could be incorporated, but it doesn't. I don't think that argument is going to get the city too far. Doesn't hold water.
The case that your client
yes
taking against the city mainly because of the time issue or because the state department will be in after the fact.
Well, the judge certainly was very sympathetic to the time issue, there's pretty good precedent elsewhere showing that when you have these large detention features, it's ugly. It ain't good. It property values around it decrease. It collects trash. I mean, this is a consolidation of untreated water from around the city that's picked up all kinds of crap along the way, and it just gets deposited here in the park, and that's a park use. There's real problems with even after the construction is done. But that kind of stuff is gonna have to get a little more flushed out when you have more facts rather than
but that's part of your case, sort of, right? Not just
talking about generally. Yes, it's certainly a good argument, I think, in the mix here.
I need to we've sort of hit this. So what I would like to do is segue into Glowville and how that connects to it. So we have a bigger picture. This is not just City Park. It's also Glowville Landing, right?
Yeah. And before you start, I'm just going to leave a couple cards here if anyone
and
wants
again,
to get in touch.
And again, the meeting on Thursday, the status conference, where it's like a housekeeping that you are inviting people to, is at 1427 Bannock, correct? The old City County building.
City County building.
409?
Courtroom 409, 10:30.
10:30.
I'm planning on going to show support, so if anyone in my neck of the woods would like to carpool.
And how long do you think this will take?
I'm up for it.
There's a number of kind of contested issues that we're battling out, so I'd say it will probably be about 45 minutes to an hour.
Okay, thank you.
Aaron, I just wanted to say thank you very, very much.
You're welcome.
To JD as well.
You're welcome. They say you can't fight City Hall. I'm doing this for free, so it's a labor of love.
But we do need money for the costs.
We do need money. The costs are involved. You get dinged a couple bucks every time you file something. The big costs are paying for court reporters for depositions. So there is a need to do a little fundraising on this, and we have done some. There is a place to donate online. If you go to GoFundMe.com, there's an entry under City Park Legal Fund. Or if you search for my name, Aaron Goldhammer, that'll come up as well. It's 1M and Goldhammer. So.
And I think this will, I'd love to have you stay for Chris's piece,
sure,
too.
Absolutely.
So that we can sort of see, if you can, just so because
that's my Diane's. So what I just wanted to add, I think there's a little bit of a simple idea about this whole Plata Park Hill. Where is it? You know, people know about City Park and they may have heard about the Cole Channel. But what I want people to get in their head, and I was going to bring maps, but I figure we have a lot of paper and I can send it to people. This is a 2.5 mile project that starts at Dahlia and 40th over by the Park Hill Golf Course and then extends through a system of pipes, culverts, ditches, and detention ponds all the way over to the river. It's 2.5 miles and I've measured it on Google. So you might hear, oh, there's a mile ditch. The system itself is 2.5 miles. The more important thing, it's not just City Park, it's three parks. It's Glowville Landing Park, which is right at the river. It's a little small park, 7.5 acres, pretty much decimated by this project that has already started. They already have the fencing to put in a water stormwater feature there, and I can talk about it in detail, but I don't think we have time. That's one park. City Park in the middle, and Park Hill Golf Course. Jackie and I went up and took pictures. They're taking the entire northeast corner of the Park Hill Golf Course and turning that into detention as well. Why? Because it's cheap. That's the sole reason. And Gilmore looked, says, we can't buy other land. So it's pretty interesting that they're going after older, poorer neighborhoods, Clayton, Cole, North Park Hill for the ditch, and City Parks for the free land. So Globeville is the saddest thing that I can think about. We tried to find a lawyer to stop it. We couldn't tie it to this lawsuit. We tried to find another lawyer to do it on the CERCLA issues, which is environmental, I forget what it stands for, but basically the soils they were violating.
Yeah.
Superfund requirements. So we've been unsuccessful, and it's very sad to watch. And it's not a designated park. So that's one small problem. It's a park, it's a city park, but it's not designated.
It was on the list to be designated.
It is.
It was.
It was.
Which, by the way, Christine, that whole problem results from the theft of Hensel Park and the whole loophole business that already was a slap in the face to the public.
So I can say a lot more, but I think if you just start thinking of this as taking three city parks and a whole bunch of land, they're buying up with most of that bond that Aaron talked about, the $116 million that was issued, is going to buy a slew of properties in northern Cole between 39th and 40th. They spent $1.5 million and bought market lead. This is a big project, and it's an industrial project. It is not resembling a stream restoration. It's a straight line, except for City Park, straight line, 6 blocks south of I-70. And if you saw Phil's video, you kind of have a picture. If you haven't, get it out of your head that this is a creek or any kind of beautiful stream bed. Okay. So. Is that enough?
Well, one of the questions I have is Park Hill Golf Course is not part of our system, is it?
It's privately owned by the Clayton Foundation.
Okay.
But I do believe it's administered by the Golf Enterprise Fund. Am I correct?
I am not entirely. I think it was. I'm not entirely sure. Is it really? Well,
I
have to double check that.
Okay. I just was. Yes. That sometimes gets into the conversation and they focus on that and not. And
it's also in a little bit different watershed.
It's in a completely different watershed. It's in the Park Hill Basin and it's at the north end and it's to stop the water from going to I-70 and flooding the Safeway Distribution Center, which is directly north of it. And there's a light rail right there. So. It's a significant one. The Safeway Distribution Center, as you know, is very large, and it will get a lot of protection from this.
Christine, this might be off topic, so you don't have to answer it if it is. I've been thinking a lot about just the highway itself, and I always like to tell everybody about Niagara Falls and all these things, and there are some awful highways of this type all over small cities in upstate New York. There was the most grand Olmsted Parkway was removed and it was turned into a lowered highway in Buffalo 50 years ago. They also built an elevated. Those highways, every place else people are realizing what a mistake they were, and we're barging ahead with this bad idea, and it still just boggles my mind,
Well, I would love it if you or Jackie, who have done all this research on these stories, I don't have time to think about the examples, could write for the Post an op-ed on what other cities are doing. But somebody else has to do that.
Well, the thing I thought of was trying to follow up with state legislature and see if they could be worked upon in any way.
We got a lobbyist, eh?
One of the things that I think is important for our committee to recognize is that we are dealing with different zoning and different issues and the Cornerstone development and the Western Stock Show. But what's very important is our parkland, and that our parkland is very, we have to protect it and its use. And it's too easy to whittle away our parkland. Oh, it's just this or it's just that. And so that is why, you know, we are so happy that you came, because we are talking about our parkland, and it is very fragile, and it needs to be protected. So I really appreciate that. And I'm sorry about Globeville.
It's really sad.
And that's my question, is if they've already got three groups
design
to design, there's money involved there or not. And they seem to be moving right along.
It was like Stop City, Stop what, Loop?
One of my question is that if in October, for example, they have already made progress in that kind of stuff, is would that be a factor in decision making?
Well, certainly the concept of injunctive relief contemplates whether or not whether you're stopping something that's ongoing, or whether you are stopping something before it starts. Mm-hmm. We are shooting to get this decided before there's shovels in the ground. Is the idea, and certainly at that point it's an easier sell. Because an injunction maintains the status quo rather than really changes something, which is one of the factors you look at when you issue an injunction.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is to get out ahead of this, and if they spend money on design work and all that, and it turns out to be money spent in vain, then that's their problem. Okay. Is the idea.
Okay, all right. Are there any other questions for Chris?
I was just going to say thank you for putting the park preservation and increasing the park acreage, because we're not even at the minimum of 10 acres per person.
No.
So we need to increase it. So thank you for your committee for looking at that issue.
Ongoing issue, right. It's a tough one.
Also historic. Mm-hmm. Both the golf course and city park.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. There's Thomas Bendelow is famed landscape architect. There's some historic features
on
the National Register. We found out that despite the fact that it has various National Register designations, other historic designations, doesn't mean a whole lot for actual citizen rights, which is sort of a sad realization. It's almost a law that's more advisory than anything else. But that will be part of the mix as far as the rationale to stop the project.
Could you give us an idea of exactly how big they propose the ditch to be?
The 39th Avenue ditch?
Mm-hmm. As it goes down to Globeville.
Well, first of all, it starts way back at the train station at 40th and Colorado, where they're going to take all the water there and turn it south, even though it naturally flows north. They're going to close up that part of the Market Lee ditch, pipe all that water down to Jackson and 39th. New pipes under Jackson, so you won't see them. I don't know how big they're going to be, but they're going to be pretty big. New pipes from Jackson to Steele. Then they're going to open it up. It could be, originally they were saying like 120 feet wide. They're now trying to narrow the footprint to 90 feet wide. And they're saying the first part may be just low flow or no flow. But by the time it gets to 49th and Franklin, there will be water in it all the time. And it will be heavy, and it will take two box culverts. I think it's 8x10, but Jay's wasn't. Mm-hmm. Two box culverts will start underground again at 39th and Franklin, and there'll be four pipes added that take all this water underneath over to Pepsi. So I don't exactly know the sides. You want to know the pitch? I can't tell you because I'm not on the design team, but by the time it gets to 39th and Franklin, it will be fairly deep
pitched because that's where most of the water they want to collect is between High and Franklin.
Yeah. And it will be in a Superfund site. It will be dug in a Superfund site.
Well, it's all in a Superfund site. All of the 39th Avenue channel from Colorado west to the river is in the Globeville, the Vasquez Superfund site. All of the PCL, the partially lowered alternative of the highway, is in a Superfund site. There's 132 contaminants in 1 mile. This is major. They're messing with a lot of dirt and groundwater issues that I think are going to cost us, it's not going to be $300 million.
So this is welcome back to Shattuck.
Thank you.
Yeah, Ronnie.
Shattuck.
Can I
My language.
The $300 million is in addition to the $1.2
billion
for the highway.
Yes.
Christine,
just to speak more to the if we're talking about deep wide ditches, the I-70 project is contemplating basically a tripling of the width of I-70's footprint between I-70 and its frontage roads through Denver. So this is a massive public works project that I think is just terribly misguided.
Christine, can I say something real quick, please? Because somebody brought up Shattuck.
Yes.
And that was a major force on the Shattuck thing. So then we may be able to use something from the Shattuck experience against that in terms of the Superfund site. Because the city then, of course, actually was our ally on that. Against the EPA and the state, but there might be some.
Okay. There should be some legal documentation.
Sean Sullivan was the main city attorney at the time, that helping us, and so there may be documentation that you can use concerning that.
Okay.
Kind of.
Well, I'd like to talk to you, but it probably will not come into Aaron's lawsuit.
Okay.
But we're working on that on other angles,
okay.
So I'd like to get your information at the end of the meeting. If
sure.
it's okay, I may stay to grab a couple of people.
Oh, sure.
Christine?
Will the proposed amenities on top of the proposed cap be a designated park?
That's a great question. You know who else asked that question? Jeannie Robb. We don't know.
It's also not very big.
No, it's not.
It's very polluted.
2 acres, but I don't know. And they don't know if the 39th Avenue Channel is going to be designated park or any of it. When I asked that question in a CORA request, I was told that they will have to wait and see what the plan is and what it looks like and what they want to do.
Depends on which department loses and gets the maintenance budget.
Maintenance.
Christine, could I ask just to kind of get a visual scale? You know, talking about 39th Avenue and the you mentioned 90 feet. And that was a reduction. That is a third of a football field wide.
That's the whole
and
area, not
yeah,
including the paths.
Oh, that includes the paths. Okay, because then that's pretty wide. Then I was, you know, in terms of an impact on a neighborhood. And then you mentioned the depth of it. And what would be the means for, I always think of Heidi talking about her house out the back and everything. What would be the means for protecting people from falling into that?
It's not that deep. It's
10 feet deep at the most.
Yeah, with no steep walls. It's going to happen.
Well, just to come back to my old upbringing, I grew up on a block that ended with the Erie Canal, honest to God. And when I was a small child, you better believe that my mother was terrified that we were going to fall in that canal. And, you know, the current is enormously fast. So,
I'll get drowned in Aurora.
Yeah.
Last week in a detention pond.
One of the questions I have is, does this canal separate the neighborhood?
Yes, that's another good question. Remember I said they're filling the Market Lead from 43rd to 40th. At Monroe, the one that goes north and south just to the west of that TOD, the transit-oriented development at 40, they're filling that because they say it's an eyesore, it's filled with garbage, etc. And they want to reunite the communities so the people in Swansea can walk over to the transit-oriented development at 40th. then they're taking this part of the market lead and they're going down. Now, right along from Steele to York, there is no neighborhood to the north. So that is not a problem. I mean, Cole, the school is to the north, but right now it's all fenced. So that's not a problem. But in the Cole neighborhood, yes, they're eliminating north-south streets. There'll be two streets, probably Franklin and High, that you'll still be able to cross on. But yes, several, you'll have to walk down a few blocks to get north and south. However, there are not many homes. There are homes, but there are not many. So it's not quite the same. But it is ironic that, yes, they're cutting up a neighborhood.
I'm going to say we have time for one more question if anybody has one.